Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you today on WILL AM 580, this December 7th, 2008. We're coming to you live today, and we're going to have a wonderful guest today, long-awaited and I think much anticipated by many of our listeners. Our guest will be U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, joining us for the full hour to talk about the economy, what's happening in Washington, the moment we face politically in this country. And it'll be a wide-open discussion, but we'll welcome your calls and comments as well. So join us today for Sherrod Brown, U.S. Senator, today on Media Matters. But first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
The government can use cell phones as tracking devices, according to documents received by the American Civil Liberties Union and the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Using a technology called Triggerfish, the FBI can track the location of cell phones without the help of service providers and possibly without a warrant. Catherine Crump is staff attorney at the ACLU.
There's a big debate going on right now within the court system of, first of all, whether the government needs to go to court to get an order in order to engage in that type of geolocation tracking, and also what the government has to show, whether it has to get a full warrant, which is the most protective standard, or whether it doesn't need to satisfy the warrant requirement.
The ACLU's position is that, under the Fourth Amendment, the government does need a warrant for this kind of search. But the government disagrees.
This debate has largely gone under the radar. One of the things that the ACLU has been trying to do is to change that so we can have an open public debate about the circumstances under which this technology that all of us, almost all of us have, a cell phone, can be turned into a tracking device. Because I don't think a lot of people are really clued into that reality right now.
GPS chips in cell phones allow tracking in real time and can retrieve a history of previous locations. It's also possible to track the phone even when you aren't making a call.
This is a country where the government has in the past really used surveillance in ways to abuse people, especially people who have been politically active or have taken positions that the government doesn't like. And so to give that type of unchecked power to the government really creates a dangerous situation.
Some courts have said the government must have a warrant to track cell phone activity. Other courts have gone in the opposite direction, giving government the power to track without warrants.
Right now, you have one legal standard in Los Angeles and another legal standard in New York. And the judges themselves are concerned about this because they say, hey, come on, it's supposed to be the rule of law. There should be one legal standard that applies across the country.
The judges are calling for congressional action. Crump agrees.
Congress could very easily make this whole problem go away by simply passing a law that says to engage in this type of tracking, the government needs to have a warrant.
As postage and print costs continue to rise and the internet gains ground as a free news and information source, many print publications, both corporate and independent, are in crisis. Solutions haven't been forthcoming for most, but a group of grassroots journalists created an opportunity for higher visibility and strengthened connections to their audience. They barnstormed through the South to show why the media are an important component of the fight for social justice. The Grassroots Media Justice Tour, which traveled from Durham, North Carolina to Denton, Texas in October, involved six journalists from radical and independent media projects from around the United States. Jason Flaherty of Left Turn Magazine headed up the tour.
We talked about, for all of our media projects, looking at this as an organizing project and more of a dialogue between the different communities we wanted to support. So we decided to do this tour that would really go through the South, places that aren't normally hit by tours, and even within the South, going to some smaller towns and historically black colleges.
At the heart of grassroots media is the goal of sharing knowledge and connecting the community. In contrast to the corporate media model that relies on a passive audience, grassroots media making is a catalyst for engaged conversation. The Grassroots Media Justice Tour visited community spaces, not just bookstores. Local organizers helped create the events, so each stop was a unique experience. In addition to Left Turn, the tour was sponsored by Color Lines, Bitch, Spread, Free Speech Radio News, and Makeshift, among others.
We really wanted to not just have somebody reading from an article that they've written, but have people really engage in dialogue on these issues and have performances and spoken words and music and workshops, skill shares, to really help bring some resources and training to people that might need it.
For more information about the Grassroots Media Justice Tour, go to durham2denton/blogspot.com.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit www.freepress.net.
I heard no intro. Hello, this is Bob McChesney. Welcome to Media Matters today, December 7th, 2008. Today, joining us on the air for our live program, a guest we've been waiting for a long time, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown from the state of Ohio joining us on the phone line. Sherrod, are you there? And unfortunately, we're having technical problems right now. I do not hear Sherrod Brown. I think we're going to have to take it to music for a moment while we work these out. Hi, this is Bob McChesney. Welcome back to Media Matters. This Sunday, December 7th, 2008, I apologize for the technical difficulties we've been having here with the phone lines at the studio at WILL. I think we've got them ironed out now. I trust we do. Let's hope so. Our guest today, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown from the great state of Ohio. Sherrod, are you there?
Bob, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, and I'm delighted we got you finally after the technical mix-up. But it's a moment, I think, that couldn't be more appropriate to have you on the air. You're a member of the Senate Banking Committee. You've been involved with the negotiations concerning the auto company, I know, and the really crucial economic decisions before the country today. If we could just start before we get into this, Sherrod, Senator Brown, if you could just talk a little bit about your sense of where our economy is right now in the United States. I mean, what do we have to look forward to in the coming months? I think a lot of Americans are really interested to get a handle on that.
Yeah, well, I think as President-elect Obama said on Meet the Press today, what we have to look forward to in the next few months is that things are going to get worse before they get better. I think people just sort of intuitively understand that because of the blowback, if you will, from these years of deregulation and tax cuts for the wealthiest people, and a neglect of the poor and a neglect of the middle class, and in my part of the country, in your part of the country, in Illinois, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri, Iowa, we're particularly hurt by the fact we have no manufacturing policy in this country. And manufacturing is still the ticket to so many people for the middle class, so the ticket to the middle class, and so much of our wealth is created by manufacturing, and so much of so many people it really is an opportunity for so many in our country. Even though manufacturing is not perhaps as trendy when kids go to college, they don't often want to come back and go into manufacturing, but we know what it creates in terms of wealth, in terms of what it means for national security and all of that. And I think you're going to see something very different come January there, too.
Now, Senator Brown, you are on the Senate Banking Committee, so you were intimately involved with the negotiations that went on with the bailout or the rescue package for the financial community during the crisis this fall. To the casual observer, to the average American, a lot of this looks like there's sort of a gun at the head put at Congress. There's hardly any time to really consider it. It was sort of like, either give us the money or else. And that as a result, it hasn't been an especially transparent or accountable operation for huge amounts of money.
Yeah, that's a very good way to say it. It was during the presidential election, so all the banking bailout issues were all politicized, of course, and that's nobody's fault. It's just what it was that way. But Paulson, initially, Secretary Paulson, came to Congress. I was on a conference call in September. I was in Zanesville, Ohio, and a medium-sized, smaller city in east of Columbus. And I was about to talk to a group, and I get a call from Harry Reid, the majority leader, asking the members of the banking committee to talk to Bernanke, Chairman Bernanke, and Secretary Paulson. And at that time, they painted this picture of doom and gloom, which was not inaccurate, I don't think, perhaps not quite as bad as they painted to us. But then asked for $700 billion and had a three-page bill they were preparing, which was, all intents and purposes, here, give me $700 billion, I'll tell you what I'm going to do with it later. Well, that was obviously changed, but there still weren't the rules and restrictions and accountability built into that legislation as there should have been. And I think we trusted Paulson to do this better than changing circumstances have let him do it. And I don't want to blame him personally. I think there are a lot of things going on, and circumstances have changed pretty dramatically. But I also think that there has been a Wall Street bias built into the Treasury Department, perhaps back through not just this president, but in the past, but particularly with this president, a bias towards Wall Street built into the Treasury Department. And you can see that in Paulson's and what Paulson has done with this half so far, about half of the $700 billion. It's gone to AIG. It's gone $25 billion to three different banks without the kind of congressional hearings and what are you going to do with it and tell us, open your books and tell us all these things the way they've done it with the auto industry, and no real interest from Paulson in dealing with the housing issues, which will affect a lot of low and middle income people and could have made a real difference if they had moved directly on housing 2 months ago.
Our guest today on Media Matters, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown from the great state of Ohio, joining us live today at WILL AM 580. I'm Bob McChesney, your host here of Media Matters. The phone number, if you'd like to call in with a question for Senator Brown, is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Questions and comments, of course, are welcome. Senator Brown, right now, as you've already talked about, the hot issue is what to do about the automobile companies and more broadly the manufacturing sector. But the immediate concern is keeping the big three automobile companies open. What is your position and where does the matter stand?
My position is we have no choice. It's not way different from the financial services issue of 2 months ago, that in the end Congress had no choice but to move because of what was happening to that part of our economy. I talked to probably three dozen business people, particularly smaller companies, smaller banks in Ohio, people all over the country at various kinds of positions that were really feeling the frozen credit, what it meant to them and their ability to meet payroll, their ability to expand, their ability to do what businesses do every day. So we had little choice back then, except it could have been done better and could still be done better. We could be doing it better. But with autos, it's not much different in that sense, that if we sit back and do nothing, this is such a huge part of our economy, and it will suffer, and we all will. And it's not just helping this industry. It's all that this industry represents in terms of manufacturing, in terms of a way of life for an awful lot of people in this country. Every state is, my state is more in Ohio, is more an auto state than most, but every state's an auto state, and that every state has significant numbers of suppliers, car dealerships, and others directly related to the auto industry. And if one of the big three fails, if one of the big three goes Chapter 11 bankruptcy, the repercussions will turn us from a pretty bad recession into something worse. And so ultimately, the question is, we've got to do this right. We've got to, first priority is to protect taxpayers in this. That's why we're asking all of these questions and putting all these requirements on the industry and telling them to come back 2 weeks later, as we did with a plan, come back to the Banking Committee in the Senate and the House with that plan. We didn't do any of that. The Secretary Paulson did none of that before he began to dole out, tens of billions of dollars to banks and other financial institutions. And I find it a bit curious and a bit disconcerting that we're doing that in autos with a bunch of blue-collar workers in the middle of the country when it comes to financial services and big financial institutions. Paulson did none of that with people who are paid much, much better than any auto workers working any amount of overtime have ever been paid.
Our guest today is Sherrod Brown, the U.S. Senator from Ohio. This is Media Matters. Our phone number here at WILOAM 580-333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. We already have a caller. Senator Brown, let's go to the phone lines now. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air.
Hi. Just in relationship to what you've already talked about, I've been concerned about, the workers up in Chicago in the Reynolds window plant that just were told with 3 days' notice that they were, that the plant was closing and they were all laid off, and that the, one of the banks that held their thing will not allow these guys to be paid their vacation or their 60 days. These people are supposed to get either 60 days notice or 60 days of pay. And apparently both of these things are not happening. And the question is any kind of pressure going to be put on banks and stuff to not allow them to do these kinds of things? Especially now that we've bailed them out. This is patently illegal, what they've done. And I'm curious as to, somebody's just recently given them a pile of money, as to what the government is going to do to ensure that they don't just use this money to turn around and hurt workers.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Now, Senator Brown, are you familiar with this factory occupation of the workers in Chicago?
Yes, I don't know a lot about it. I read about it in the paper today. I've seen this similar situation before, and there was a case not quite as egregious as this that the company did in Ohio, and we were able to help them get all the pay they were owed. But I still think I don't know enough about it to say that the law was broken. I assume that the caller is right about that, because it sounds like they did something that under what's called the Warn Act, which is the plant closing legislation that employers are required to give notification to employees, as she's suggesting. There are exceptions because of really extraordinary circumstances. I have no idea if this company had those extraordinary circumstances. Senator Obama and Senator Clinton and I last year introduced a bill to update the Warn Act to close a lot of these loopholes. It's called the Forewarn Act. That bill, Bush would have vetoed it. I'm very hopeful now that we'll see it come back with much better chance of passage. But I know that Senator Durbin's very interested in this. And I suggest, and I'm pretty sure that Senator Durbin's, I spoke to him a couple of days ago. We didn't talk about this. We were talking about something else. But I'm sure that he is going to go to bat for those workers so that they get back pay and they whatever they can do with health care and all the issues that go around it. There's a case in the paper today about Archway Cookies in Ashland, Ohio, where they shut the plant and workers lost their health care immediately. And that just tells me all of these plant closings, among other things, say we got to do universal health coverage this year, no matter how bad the economy is, no matter all these problems that President-elect Obama is going to deal with come January. We've got to make universal health care one of the top priorities, because too many people are losing their jobs and lose their health care and all the bad things that happen with that. And we've got to enforce the laws on plant closings. We've got to work to start to create jobs and turn this economy around. But people need health care between jobs, and that's just got to be a top priority.
Well, Senator Brown, I read this story quickly, and I'm not sure I have these facts straight. So let me qualify what I'm about to ask you with that comment, that if I understand the Chicago situation properly, this company was actually owned in part, if not in whole, by one of the banks that was the recipient of a major bailout check already from Paulson, which sort of made the egregious nature of it seem that much more offensive.
Well, and I that's right. I don't know that that brings any different legal question to it. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know that. But I suggest that, and again, I'm sure Senator Durbin's working on this, mm-hmm. and people should make sure that they're talking to his office about it. But if there's any, it's the, one of the things that I'm pushing in this auto issue is that that the auto industry, and I asked each of the three CEOs, and their answers were adequate but not as good as positive as I wanted when I said, can you commit to this committee that you will, if you get tax dollars, that you will continue, you will have in the future, while you're receiving tax dollars, equal to or greater domestic content, whether it's from suppliers or from the assembly of the cars themselves and the trucks, that you'll have the same percentage of domestic content or better than you do now. That's, we're trying to get a provision in the bill to do that so that, you know, that I just don't, any more than I want money to the banks and then the banks shut down a plant, or money to the banks and they invest it. They pay huge compensation and bonuses or big dividends, any more than I want money to the auto industry and they use that to open up a plant in China or Mexico. So these tax dollars need to work for us, not for the banks or the auto industry's bottom line only. I mean, I want the auto industry to thrive. I want Chicago banks or whoever made that loan to thrive, but I don't want them to thrive at the expense of workers of that plant in Chicago and auto workers and auto worker suppliers, auto suppliers all over the Midwest and the whole country.
My name's Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters on WILL AM 580, based in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Our guest today, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, speaking to us live over the phone. We're talking about the economy, politics, the state of the world today. Senator Brown, you just talked about health care and the need for universal health care. I recall during the presidential campaign that then-candidate Obama said that, you know, in a rational world, in a sane world, in a better world, we would clearly have a single-payer type health system like almost all the other industrial democracies have. But that's not possible here because of the political strength of the insurance industry, which so has a stranglehold over politicians and public opinion. Can we get around the insurance company to have universal health care, or is it inevitable at some point they're going to have to be wrestled to the ground?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to follow President Obama on the plan he wants to push through. I think that's a decision, by and large, that he is going to make. I think he'll make it in the public interest, and I think he'll get the best health care system we can build. It is political pressure that pushes back on single payer. I prefer the term Medicare for all rather than single payer, because people love Medicare in this country, and people, when you hear the term single payer, they dream up all kinds of things because they've heard all kinds of things to describe that system. But a Medicare for all system, I'm convinced, would work. But I'm also convinced that the reason it's so difficult to pass is not just insurance, the power of insurance companies. I think it's also that a lot of people are happy or comfortable with their employer-based health insurance. They're less happy than they were a year or 5 years ago because they've seen it disintegrate in part in many cases. But I think they more fear something new and different from something they've had, even if what they have is declining in value a bit. But I think there's a lot of things we can do around the employer-based health insurance. Senator Obama in the campaign promised that anybody that wanted to have their health insurance could keep it. I think he needs to live up to that promise, can keep what they have. So because of that, I think we work around it. But I think over time, we probably move to a health insurance company, their health insurance system that works better than this patchwork of health insurance that we've seen in this country for too many years, with too many people uncovered and too many people inadequately covered, and all kinds of cost shifting all over the place, to small business, to individuals, to employers, to the government, and so many people get very inadequate health care, let alone health care coverage. So we've got a lot of work to do. I think we can do it right, but as I said, I'm going to follow President Obama's lead on it.
Our guest, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio, joining us live today on Media Matters. We've got a few callers who have been waiting patiently. Let's get to the phone lines right now. First, line one, Champagne, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello, Senator. I appreciate your comments about Paulson's approach and, in essence, kind of giving the financial community a blank check. And if he's going to do that, why wouldn't he carry that on to an industry that is more intensively, linked to labor and so forth? But I guess my conclusion from that complaint would be opposite of yours. It seems to me that the country would be better served for neither industry or sector to be bailed out at all. Because whether you have a losing company or a losing industry, to subsidize those losses, you're just kind of continuing a charade, propping up bad industries that are proven failures in those industries with honest, hardworking people's money that have succeeded in what they're doing. So you're taking money from the successful people and giving it to the losing industries. I think would be much better off to not create that moral hazard and to let the companies fail, let the dust settle. And we're kidding ourselves to think that the auto industry would go away. I mean, there's no question a new one would rise from the ashes, basically free from a lot of the restrictions and previous commitments and so forth that they've overindulged in here. So I'd appreciate your comments on that.
No, I see that point. I just think that there would be too much pain. I mean, nobody knows how it would come out if the auto industries went down. Nobody really knows what would happen to those workers in those industries. I think it would cause us to go into such an economic tailspin, worse than we're already in, that it's not a risk we want to take. I also think that the auto industry, and I've been pretty, even though there's a lot of auto industry in my state, I've been very critical over the years. I supported higher mileage standards against their lobbying and a lot of mail I got saying, this auto industry can't deal with this. Well, really, they can. But what's happened? Here's where I defend the auto industry. In the last couple of years, last 5 years maybe that goes back too long. But in the last couple of years, they really have begun to do a lot of the right things. Ford had a profit the first quarter of this year, and then two things have happened to the auto industry that were beyond their control. Understanding much of what they'd done was in their control in the last 50 years. They've made serious mistakes. They've lost a lot of market share. But in the last couple of years, what's happened to them has in some sense been beyond their control. One is what's happened with credit, so that the industry can't. So many individual individual people that want to buy cars couldn't get credit. And within the industry, suppliers and dealers couldn't get the credit they need to do what businesses do with each other. And second, the recession has hit so hard to the point that every major auto company's sales of cars is significantly down. Honda and Toyota and those companies could handle this better because they aren't paying huge retiree costs and health care costs for people over 65 because they don't have retirees in any appreciable number. Honda opened in Ohio 30 years ago, so they're starting to have some number of retirees, but nothing carrying the burden of our companies. So I give them more slack than that, even though I think their executives have not done a particularly good job with this company, these companies over the last couple, three decades.
You know, if I can, before we go to our next caller, Sherrod Brown, there's an issue I do want to ask you about. I know that's near and dear to the heart of organized labor, which is the Freedom to Choose Act, which is for a lot of workers and union members is one of the prime rallying calls of the 2008 election. Could you talk a little bit about that act and where it stands and what it means for America?
Sure. I think the U.S. workforce is much less organized in unions than it was 20 or 30 years ago. Partly that's because it's a different sort of workforce. There's less manufacturing, less big manufacturing companies with heavy unionization. It's partly in federal law, and it's increasingly difficult for people that want a union in a workplace to organize. The national polls have shown more than 50% of people would like a union if they could be in one. Yet only 11%, I think, of the private sector workforce is organized. Our legislation simply would say if a majority people in a bargaining unit in a workplace want to join a union and they show that by signing a card saying I want to join the union of the whatever union they choose, AFSCME or steelworkers or whatever, that they would automatically be recognized as the bargaining unit. They then have, I forget the window, 90 days, something like that, to negotiate a contract. And then if they can't come to a decision, a resolution, then it's submitted to an arbitrator chosen jointly by both parties to make the decision on what the contract, what the contract will be. And I think that, one of the most important things of unionization is most important reason for it is the middle class in this society has shrunk in the last 35 years going back to the mid 70s, but is especially in the last 8 years the middle class continues to shrink. People are the top 10% are making more money, and most of the rest of the country isn't. And the workforce in this country is increasingly productive. It used to be that the more productive you were, the more you got paid. Now workers are continually more productive, increasingly productive, yet their wages are stagnant. And a big part of that is because they don't have anybody to be their agent. You know, Britney Spears has an agent. Paris Hilton has an agent. Workers need an agent so they can have somebody speak for them and give them the power through numbers to be able to basically share in the wealth they create. If you're making money for your boss, you ought to be able to get a raise.
Do you think you have the votes, Sherrod Brown, to get this passed through the Senate?
Very close. I think, it's going to be the biggest lobbying fight, the biggest fight in Congress. Maybe we've seen labor management fight since NAFTA, since North American Free Trade Agreement. I think it will pass the House easily enough, but I think the Senate will be very difficult because we need 60 votes. So far, one Republican is supportive of it, Arlen Specter. No other one is yet, but we will see.
Our guest today is Sherrod Brown, U.S. Senator from Ohio. I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580. We're coming to you live today. That means our phone lines are open at 333-9455 or toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now to some patiently waiting callers. Line 2, Champaign, you're on the air with Senator Sherrod Brown.
Hello, Senator Brown. Thank you for being willing to do this.
Sure.
When I listened to the first lady who called in, I could hear the indignation in her voice. And as we watched the various CEOs cruise in their private jets, it was perfectly clear that those who are at the top levels simply don't understand what has been happening. When GM withdrew those electric cars back years and years ago and simply crushed them, that gave you an indication of what direction they were heading. I am interested in knowing what our legislators are personally and specifically doing to make sure that they are connected with people at the ground level and that they have an ethical commitment to do right. I actually flew on a plane with Albert Gore's father, and he flew in coach. There's something desperately amiss amongst those who are purporting to lead us. So, Senator Brown, could you tell me what you personally do to demonstrate your commitment to ethics? The state of Illinois is so awash in criminals who have been voted into office, and I would like to know where you stand on such behaviors and what you yourself do to make sure you don't slip into that slough. Thanks so much.
Sure.
I appreciate your willingness to do this. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thank you very much, caller. And I must say, Sherrod Brown, before you answer that, in defense of my state of Illinois, I must say Ohio's track record in this regard isn't going to win any gold medals either.
And I would, and what Illinois did do was send us the next president. So I think that Illinois gets a lot of credit in spite of all the other things in politics in your state or my state or too many states. Thank you for your very blunt question. I appreciate that. Here's what I do. I ride coach. I almost always ride coach. So that's it. But I also ride usually in these small commercial planes between Cleveland and in Washington or Columbus and Washington. But there are commercial planes with other Ohioans on the plane. I made a promise when I first ran for Congress in 1992 that I would pay my own health insurance personally until, and I don't come from a lot of wealth or anything, I'd pay my own health insurance until Congress passed universal health care, and I've paid my own health insurance for my 14 years in the House of Representatives and my 2 years in the Senate, and will continue to pay my own health insurance. That's the pledge I made. I thought, frankly, that the Congress would pass universal health coverage before now, so I would have been on the plan that everybody else was. We didn't, so I continue to pay my own. In terms of, I don't have other jobs. I don't take speaking grant fees. I don't do anything like that. And I also would add that in terms of staying in touch with people, I early in my term, beginning in January of 2007, I began to do roundtables around Ohio where I'll invite 15 or 20 or 25 community people, a good cross-section. You'll see a doctor sitting next to a carpenter, sitting next to somebody who works for Goodwill, sitting next to a teacher. And I'll invite 15, 20, 25 people in a community and sit there for an hour and a half and listen to them. I was in one of the most rural counties in Ohio yesterday and did that. I've done 125 of these roundtables in my 22 months in office. And 87 of Ohio's 88 counties, I will do the 88th county this next week or the following week. That's the best way I stay in touch with people, just to hear them. The other things I do, things that I know Senator Durbin and Senator Obama were doing in Washington, anybody in Washington on a Thursday morning, if they're from my state, can come and have coffee with me. We just have a room at the Capitol, and we bring fair trade coffee grown by workers that are getting paid a decent wage in Central America or around the world, so they can. I've actually been on these fair trade coffee farms where workers can send their kids to school and have decent housing. They're paid a dollar plus per pound rather than the 40 or 50 cents a pound that non-fair trade coffee growers get. So I would suggest that I would encourage all of you to ask for fair trade coffee when you buy coffee, whether it's at a coffee shop or whether it's the grocery store. But we do that in my office every Thursday. Anybody from Ohio can come and just stop in and have coffee with me. So I do as much as I can to stay directly in touch with people I always have in my whole career. And that's my answer.
Sherrod Brown, U.S. Senator, our guest today in Media Matters. You've just been listening to him speak. I'm Bob McChesney, the host here in WILL AM 580. You know, Senator Brown, one of the raging issues, maybe the largest issue immediately facing President-elect Obama, is the size and the nature of the stimulus, economic stimulus for the economy. Recently in the last few days, Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz has basically said that what the Obama administration is looking at, or what the general consensus needs, to almost be doubled to have the proper effect to stimulate the economy. There's also a considerable pressure that's emerging to see that a lot of this increased spending go towards enhancing the military. What is your take on what the size of the economic stimulus should be and where this money should be spent?
Well, the money is the size, Bob, seems to be growing almost every week because the economy is is more and more troubled. And so I what I would say today, I might say a higher number 2 weeks from now, or certainly a month from now, or 6 weeks from now when Barack takes office. So I don't know what the size should be. I'm listening to Barack and others say 5, 6, 7, 800 billion. I don't know enough yet to know that what that number should be, but I think it needs, I agree with Stiglitz that it needs to be a lot bigger than some economists were saying a couple of weeks ago. I think the money should, we should have three major criteria for this money in descending order. One is projects that are ready to go right now, so that if it's a bridge in Springfield or a bridge in Cleveland, or whether it's a school building or whether it's a new highway project or a mass transit project or weatherization in people's homes through the program called LIHEAP, Low Income Energy Assistance for the elderly especially. The money needs to be able to be spent right now, not a project that's going to take a year or two to begin spending. Second, it needs to do one of two things. It needs to either help people directly now, unemployment benefits or unemployment extension, for instance, food stamps, LIHEAP, energy assistance. It either helps people right now, or it's going to need to make sure that it doesn't just create jobs with the construction dollars now, but it leads to other economic development, other kinds of jobs. So if you're looking at a bridge project or highway project, what does that do to help us grow jobs in that community in addition to the construction jobs right then? And third, I think it needs to be green. So these need to be projects that will give us a lot towards, will help a lot towards a greener economy, towards less energy use. That means more in alternative energy. It means more on helping traffic congestion. It means more on fixing up school buildings so that they can be more energy efficient, retrofitting solar or just better conservation, all of that. So it also needs to be with a component for rural development too, broadband, those sorts of things that really will help people, will provide opportunity for people to join the middle class, because to me that's what it's all about.
Our guest, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, you've been listening to. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Let's go to line 3, Urbana. Thank you for your patience. You're on the air.
Hi there. I have two really specific questions, and then I'll ring off. I hate to take us backwards, but my understanding of what turned out to be the bank bailout was that it was specifically written to buy up bad mortgages, and I'm curious as to why Congress can't call Paulson and Bernanke back and caused that to go the way it was written. My second question, our airlines went through Chapter 11 and seems as though they've come out much the better. What exactly is wrong with the automakers going Chapter 11? And I'll ring off. Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. Senator Brown?
Thanks for two very good questions. Paulson was given the flexibility to either buy troubled assets. That's what he said he was going to do, but he was given more flexibility than that. So he could instead do equity injections into these banks. What we were hoping he would do, the reason we wanted him to have flexibility, is so we could persuade him to spend directly on helping loan modifications, the same thing that the head of the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, Sheila Bair, wants to do. She wants to take $35 or $40 billion of the $750 and help with loan modifications, which would help stabilize home prices, help neighborhoods, and I think end the sort of help this recession bottom out so we could begin growing back again. Paulson rejected all those. We were simply not able, with George Bush as president, to write this bill the way we would have wanted, or the Bush people never would have signed off on it. That sounds like I'm just not willing to accept my responsibility. I mean, I'm responsible. I voted for it too. But we would have wanted to write it much differently. Paulson, when you give him that kind of flexibility, made decisions that we would like to, as you suggest, bring him back. But we can't change the laws with Bush in the White House until January 20th. So I think you're going to see a very different behavior out of the Barack Secretary of the Treasury than you're seeing out of Bush's Secretary of the Treasury. In terms of bankruptcy, airlines were different because when you buy an airline ticket, you don't really care a lot about what the whether the airline's going to be in business a year from now or 5 years from now. When you buy a car, you really do want to know this car is going to this company is going to be around a year from now to get service, around 2 years from now when you want to buy replacement parts and all that. So most of us that are voting on this, and most people that know the industry well, think that if they go bankrupt into bankruptcy, people will lose so much faith in these three companies. If any one of them goes into bankruptcy, they'd lose so much faith in the homegrown auto industry, the big three. These companies really couldn't continue to do business and stay stay vibrant and stay viable as companies. I think that the other thing that would be difficult on this is some have said we should do a prepackaged bankruptcy, whatever that is, where you get all the stakeholders involved to decide what they're going to do. Then they declare bankruptcy. Then they begin to fix things. The problem is this industry is so much more complicated than the airline industry, and that's a pretty complicated industry. But because of the number of suppliers, the dealerships, the assembly plants, the engine plants, the stamping plants, all that this industry is all about, scattered all over many, many states. And I just don't think that that this would have worked, this prepackaged bankruptcy. I think there's too much risk to what would have happened to these workers in this industry and the workers in the not just the auto companies, the union workers of the auto companies, but also workers at auto dealerships and auto suppliers. And there are a lot of small businesses all over, and I just don't think it would have worked with Chapter 11 that way.
Our guest, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, you've just been listening to. I'm Bob McChesney, your host of Media Matters. Before we go back to the phone line, Senator Brown, I do want to touch on one other issue that doesn't deal with the economy or the economic crisis, which is Afghanistan. This is, by all accounts I've been reading, the bottom has come out of the cup there. It's virtually hopeless to win any sort of military victory. Yet it seems like the U.S. government is aiming more towards a military solution than the reporters covering it on the ground seem to think is possible. What is your take on Afghanistan, and are you concerned that maybe we're getting into a mess there that could undermine whatever else President Obama might want to do in his administration?
I am concerned about Afghanistan. I think that President-elect Obama sees these pitfalls. I mean, the fact is, in spite of McCain's comments during the campaign, Obama was right on these issues. He was right about the war to begin with. He was right that more attention should have been paid to Afghanistan than Iraq. I think he is very concerned about what could happen in Afghanistan. That's why he wants to move troops out of Iraq, bring many of them home, and send some of them to Afghanistan. Afghanistan's a very different challenge from Iraq, but I think he's going to. I'm sure he's going to stay on course for exiting Iraq. I think that Afghanistan. You say he wants that there is more move towards a military solution. He understands, as he took a lot of hits for in his campaign, he understands that it's diplomacy and military both. And he always would prefer diplomacy, as I would, rather than military when possible. And I think there's still a lot of diplomacy always going on with our relations with Pakistan and Afghanistan. Much of Afghanistan is all about Pakistan, and what happens in Pakistan is so much a part of this. And I think that's why Barack, once he's in office, will send Secretary of State Clinton and other diplomats to that part of the world is a very crucial area for us.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line one, Champaign County. Thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Senator Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, it's hard to return to my topic after Afghanistan is raised, but I wanted to thank you very much for your support of the free choice. And I think there's a media story there, because it seems that the media, I saw one chat show on a Sunday morning where Steny Hoyer, I believe, was asked, you had a secret ballot to oust somebody or other in the hierarchy, but why can't workers have a secret ballot? And this is the line that the corporate reality is PR people are using to undermine this. Affiliation with a union is not like voting for a candidate. You're going to have to stand behind your decision in the workplace. And if you don't, you know, if you can sign the card, that seems like that should be enough. I wanted to ask you to turn your eyes across the lake and look to Canada, because I think there's a story there too, with this proroguing of the parliament, the suspension of the parliament. It sounds absolutely absurd, and I know a lot of Americans aren't following it, but I would also I bring it up because, you know, they have neither the problem with the so-called jobs bank that the UAW has had to deal with in this negotiation, and the so-called legacy costs, the contracts, because they do have the archetypal single-payer system, and that those costs are not weighing down their in fact, GM and Ford, I think, are moving some production in across the lake into Ontario just because of that. But I really think we need the constituency should be pushing this. You acquiesce in what Obama's going to suggest, but I think that we really need to raise that as part of the argument, and I'd like for you to respond to that.
I think that's a very good point. I mean, one of the most important things we do, and I was quoting the New York Times today on this story about Archway Cookies in Ashland that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, all these people that lose their health insurance there, is one of the reasons. The competitiveness issue that you just brought up is the other major reason. I mean, the humanitarian side of all of this is why we need to, no matter how bad the economy is, we need to work on universal coverage. And if the U.S. had universal coverage, particularly if we shifted it more and more to something like Canada has, we would the auto industry and all these legacy costs for older industries in our country, older manufacturing firms, would begin to abate, and then the competitiveness then we'd just be a much more competitive economy with particularly these bigger older companies. And what you said about the Employee Free Choice Act, you're exactly right. The problem, the industry, main manufacturer, I mean, the business is going to say repeatedly, you're taking away people's right to vote. Well, they've never shown this much interest in helping their workers as we see now, when they are always looking out for their workers' best interest, talking about these situations. But I think it's not like these union elections have been fair. When there's a union election going on, the company has every advantage against the union when these elections start, in large part because the company, even though some acts are illegal, still find ways to fire workers, to discipline workers, and to browbeat those workers quietly or brazenly or not so, to get them to vote their way on this. They may have a secret ballot in the end, but the company certainly has an awful lot of influence in this election. It's not like Barack Obama running against John McCain or Jane Smith running against Joe Jones in Springfield or in Urbana for a city council or mayor or something, where both sides have more or less an even shot. And this is a case with these NLRB elections, the National Labor Relations Board elections. Clearly, the advantage lies with the employer. And Republicans had all these years. Now they're saying, don't take away the right to choose. They're free choice. Republicans had all these years to fix it and make this fair, and they haven't done it. And this is the fairest way. If a majority of workers sign a card and say they want to belong to a union, then they ought to be able to belong. They ought to have the union in that shop. And the employers will say, well, there can be intimidation by union organizers or by fellow workers. Well, fellow workers don't have nearly the ability to intimidate than your boss does, just by nature of the difference in the power of each. And this is a much, much improved system. This would be a much improved system over what we have.
Our guest, Sherrod Brown, we've only got a few minutes left. Let's go back to our final caller right now. Line 2, Champagne, you're on the air with U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown.
Hi, thanks, Senator Brown, for being on the program today. It's a pleasure to have a chance to ask you a question. I'm interested in the stimulus plan and the bailout plans. I was glad to see that Obama is signaling that some of his broader policy goals are going to be incorporated in the stimulus plan, whether it be health care or alternative energy. And I appreciate your argument that any stimulus plan needs to address short-term economic issues, money that can get out there now. But it seems to me there's also space for longer-term progressive goals to be incorporated. And I'm wondering what the prospects are for that. What I have in mind, particularly as we talk about the terms of a potential auto bailout plan, would be not focusing on business as usual, the production of cars, and not only incorporating ideas like greater fuel efficiency or hybrid cars, but perhaps retooling America's major industries so that we're talking about more efficient creation of light rail systems for local transportation or a truly functioning national rail system so that we're actually lessening our dependence on cars in general. And along with that, I'm wondering if there's any talk about incorporating more agricultural measures into the broader stimulus package so that we could shape a return to local farming practices and reduce some of the dependence on transporting food at long distances and get some energy savings through those methods as well.
Yeah, very, very good question. I think that, I want to see in this stimulus package, this recovery package, I want to see short-term and long-term progressive goals. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that the agriculture component, I'm not sure how we would do that. I'm sure there are some ideas. If you want to send me an email to my office address, just go on the website and look. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I think with public transit, I remember right after September 11th, there was all the talk that we would start looking at high-speed rail. If we'd had a different president, I think we would have, but we didn't. But I remember reading almost 50% of the flights in our country, the airline flights in our country, were fewer than 300 miles. And that means that there should be high-speed rail from Cleveland to Detroit to Chicago to Springfield, Cleveland to Columbus, Indianapolis to Columbia. We should have, if we had put the kind of money into high-speed rail and still could, it does meet those long-term progressive goals. It puts people to work in highly skilled construction jobs. It saves energy. It's an easier way to travel. It's safer. It's easier to combat terrorism. All the kinds of things that high-speed rail would bring to our country. The technology advancements, all of those things. And I am convinced that President-elect Obama, once he's president, is part of this whole effort with stimulus, with economic recovery, will incorporate these short-term, medium-term, and long-range goals in our country. On the agriculture side, I'd like to hear more about what you have to say about it. But I think that there are some very good ideas in what you said, and I think a lot of that will be taken up. And I'm going to push a lot of the putting people back to work and building trades, doing weatherization and home heating, getting those work crews out, particularly in rural areas where they can get good-paying jobs and learn skills and help older people. There's a lot of these. There's so much of what we can do here that will have a real synergism that it's a good thing in four different ways, and I think your ideas take us that way, too.
And if I'm not mistaken, Senator Sherrod, you are a member of the Senate Agricultural Committee. So.
I'm a member of the Agriculture Committee, and we did a few things in the Farm Bill. I mean, we always fall short on this because it's such a complicated bill, and there's all these interest groups that have great influence, of course, in our society and in Congress, too. But we made some progress on some conservation titles. Senator Harkin, Senator Durbin played a good role there. We made some progress, a lot of progress on nutrition issues in there. It's still got too much money in there for some of the wealthiest farmers and not enough emphasis yet on family farmers. But I think that I know that President Obama will share that interest.
U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, I hear the band tuning up in the background. That means they're trying to clear me out of the studio for our next show. So I want to thank you very much for joining us today in Media Matters.
Bob, thank you very much. Thanks for the public service you do and the good work you do everywhere.
Well, that's much appreciated. I'm Bob McChesney. I want to thank my producer, Andrew Boyle, for his fine work and the staff at WILL down there in the studio for their great work. And we'll be back in 167 hours. Until then, have a great week, everyone.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance, private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings or other special events, lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
In the weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, mostly sunny skies today with a high of 27. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 18 degrees. And tomorrow, light rain showers throughout the day with a high of 38. Tomorrow night, continued precipitation, possibly turning to snow during the overnight hours with a low of 33 degrees. And Tuesday, continued light rain showers with a high of 39. This is WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.